Ladies and gentlemen, a good morning to you. This is John Cameron Swayze in the NBC newsroom in New York. Today's roundup includes spot news pickups from three overseas points, as well as the customary picture of capital doings direct from Washington. Our travels take us to Rome, where there is plenty to talk about, to London for late developments of the Big Four Conference, and to the Far East. A number of people have made newsworthy remarks, and we'll round those up at this point, but now, your announcer.
3/4 of all the grain raised in the United States has been going into the feeding of livestock to produce meat for American tables. But that grain is needed now to save the men, women, and children of European countries from starvation. That's why your government asks you to cut down on meat and thus save wheat to save lives. Observing Meatless Tuesday and Eggless Thursday will help. So will saving all the flour you can in baking. And remember to conserve all foods by not cooking or serving more than your family can eat, and by serving the foods which are plentiful in your local markets. Europe is hungry, and hungry men do not build a lasting peace. So it's up to you. Save meat, save wheat, save the peace. And now, back to the NBC newsroom.
Overseas this morning, the news is topped by the general strike in Rome, now in its second day with no signs of let-up. In fact, there are reports that 20,000 communists are en route to the Italian capital from other parts of the country and that real violence may be just around the corner. The violence has not stopped in Jerusalem. Early reports today tell of grenades being thrown into Jewish shops with injuries to a number of persons. In this country, the toll in last night's Army C-47 plane crash near Memphis, Tennessee, stands at 20, possibly 21. All aboard were killed. The question is how many were on the plane when it hit a hillside near Memphis shortly after dark. It was en route from the West Coast and was within 2 miles of the Memphis Municipal Airport when it crashed. Presumably, all aboard were Army personnel. The helicopter, which yesterday rescued 3 of the 6 survivors of that ATC transport plane which crashed in Labrador, is ready for a second trip this morning to bring out the other 3 survivors of the disaster in which 23 were killed. First reports say a power failure caused that crash in inaccessible country near Goose Bay. The story is brighter from Medical Lake, Washington, where a B-29 crash-landed in a field with 2 engines blazing. All members of the 10-man crew escaped serious injury. Among those with things to say in the news this morning is well-known Chicago University Chancellor Robert Hutchins, who looks on the brighter side. He says America is in no present danger of war with Russia, and is in no present danger from communism. He said world government is necessary, and therefore it is possible. But, says Chancellor Hutchins, it must be based on justice. And since we are the most prosperous and powerful nation in the world, we'll have to give up certain economic and political advantages. Consequently, it will cost the American people a good deal in various ways to have world government, but it would cost much more to have war. Famed scientist Dr. Vannevar Bush, head of the government's research board, announces a new study to be made about man. Ford reminds Dr. Bush, man is just as important as these machines we hear so much about when it comes to national defense. Hence, a scientific checkup on his behavior, why he acts like he does under a variety of circumstances. Politics is in the news. Henry Wallace doused any hopes the Democrats might have had that he would swing into the fold by saying that if he had to choose between President Truman and Senator Taft, he would favor the senator. And then he turned his attention to New York's Governor Dewey while visiting in the state capital of Albany and labeled Dewey a political opportunist who rarely ever has an idea until the Gallup poll proves 70% of the people are for it, which is, of course, a quotation of the Wallace remark. Meanwhile, Dewey was criticizing the president for the way he has been handling domestic affairs. The governor spoke at a dinner in Washington. It is a Washington where a top spot in the news is held by government official Edwin W. Pauley and the inquiry into his wheat trading transactions, where freshman Senator Baldwin continues to defy the heads of his own Republican Party, and where the subject of inflation, or anti-inflation if you like, is getting plenty of attention from both parties. Getting back to the international scene, in Paris, the National Assembly takes up the matter of relations with Russia. They remain badly strained following the French accusation that Russia used a repatriation camp to forcibly remove French citizens, some 60 of them, to the Soviet against their will. With some progress at last achieved, the Big Four foreign ministers continue their meetings, and we'll hear about this during our global tour. It's time for it now. First stop in Italy. We span the Atlantic to hear from Jack Figon in Rome.
The number of minor clashes between police and strikers is growing steadily here in the second day of Rome's general strike. There is trouble brewing, and unless the strike is settled soon, these minor clashes may well turn into the kind of serious rioting that is the obvious aim of the communists. This morning, the Ministry of Transport began furnishing transportation throughout the paralyzed city with several hundred of the little camionetti, the trucks that were the only means of transportation during the war. Each truck is guarded by several police, and at every terminal, crowds of strikers are milling around trying to stop this service. The government announced that more trucks were being brought in from surrounding towns. Some attempts have been made to block roads leading to Rome, but so far, traffic has been kept moving. Even socialist leader Nenni found himself involved in a minor clash at Piazza Colonna, just around the corner from the Parliament building this morning. Police were driving jeeps into a crowd milling around the entrance to the building when Nenni and Communist Deputy Paiatta, on their way from Parliament, stopped to argue with the police. Neither of the two leftist leaders were injured, but they did get a little first-hand, rough experience in the art of demonstrating. The back-to-work movement, started by the Christian Democrat section of the Labor Federation, is growing. With transportation of a sort available, many more workers, confused and disgusted with the strike, will return to their jobs. The communist-dominated Federation has warned that efforts to break the strike in this manner will be met by force. There are some signs of changing sentiment within the Executive Committee of the Federation, however. Last night, the vote was 13-8 for continuing the strike, as compared to 17-3 2 days ago. This is Jack Begone in Rome.
Next, that report on the foreign ministers by Merrill Muller in London.
The Kremlin, apparently on direct instructions of Marshal Stalin, has sent Foreign Minister Molotov a new conciliatory instruction for the Big Four conference in London, including a concession on Russia's reparation demand from Germany, I'm told today by Eastern European diplomatic sources. These sources, admittedly associated with communism, state that Molotov requested new instructions from Moscow in order to meet Secretary of State Marshall's demands for clarification of Russia's reparation demands. These instructions, with a statement Molotov is to make today or tomorrow, arrived from Moscow last night. Stalin and the Kremlin are reported in a conciliatory mood since they have nothing to lose. My diplomatic sources point out that the Kremlin, in the past week, has twice surprised the Western world with considerable financial retrenchments in its policy of European reparation demands. The first was in the reevaluation of the Austrian shilling, where the Russians had been flooding the market with their own printing and then suddenly agreed to help stabilize the nation's finances. The second today is the Russian settlement for 25 cents on the dollar with Hungary on all German asset debts, which Hungary owes Russia by virtue of that satellite peace treaty. My sources state that the Russian concession on German reparations will be nowhere near as great, but that it is likely to be more than a quarter reduction. This would represent no actual loss, since Russia has already taken that out of Germany without any bookkeeping. But as a concession on paper, it will look good. It will prolong the council meeting here by pushing the ministers into the more delicate debate of political unity on Germany, a problem for which no minister wishes to be responsible. This is Merrill Muller in London.
The anticipated report from the Far East, I am just informed, will not be heard this morning. We are unable to contact our correspondent in Tokyo at the moment. We're sorry this is true. However, we do want to note at this time that Chinese communists have now cut the railway north to Mukden, Manchuria, in 8 places. This is according to an acknowledgement of the government in Peiping. And these new forays of the communists, which actually extended south of the Great Wall into China proper, have prevented expected resumption of Peiping-Mukden traffic. An Associated Press correspondent, Harold K. Milks, has made a trip over a portion of a rail line in that country, and he reports how they made it. An 11-car special Blue Express, as it was called, made the first trip over a section of rail line recently laid. It was preceded and followed at times by armored trains and carrying guards with submachine guns. And correspondent Milks accompanied a party of officials, including China's Minister of Economic Affairs, on this tour of a section of the war zone. It all points up the fact that railroad traffic in the war zone out there, where the government and communist forces are fighting, railroad traffic is not a very safe thing and not a thing that runs smoothly in any way. Since we do have a bit of additional time here, I'd like to augment our mention of what's taking place in the Holy Land by including a report from Jerusalem, which tells us in part that the whine of bullets and the dull boom of grenades have ushered in the 13th day of terror in Palestine. That is the 13th day since the United Nations voted to partition the Holy Land over the opposition of the Arabs. Back home again now, and time for our morning checkup by Leif Eade in Washington.
This morning, it's that man Ed Pauley again. The last time it was oil and politics that wouldn't mix, and Pauley didn't get to be Undersecretary of the Navy. Now he's in the Army, Special Assistant to the Secretary, and he'll soon find out whether wheat and politics mix any better. Republicans say that Democrat Pauley is speculating in the grain markets while working for Uncle Sam, with the inference that he might be getting useful inside information. Pauley says he doesn't want to quibble and says, yes, I have holdings in grain, but his dealings are perfectly proper and ethical. He says he had those holdings before he came to work for the Army Department to protect myself and my family against rising prices. But as he promised, he's getting out of the market as fast as he can without having to pay those terrific tax rates on short-run windfall profits on speculation. He said it was understood when he came back to work for the government that he'd have nothing at all to do with any Army deals in anything that he had any financial interest in, and he's had no inside information of any kind. And he says everybody, as long as we have inflation, ought to get into the commodities market to protect himself. Chairman Bridges, Senate Appropriations Committee, will put the questions to Ed Pauley this morning. Otherwise, the Republican Policy Committee on the Senate side meets to pass on the long-term anti-inflation program. And there's a rumble from freshman Republican Senator Baldwin, who wants to give the president what the Republican leaders don't want to give, club-in-the-closet rationing powers over meat, wheat, and other scarce foods. And commenting on Henry Wallace's statement that he'd vote for Senator Taft over President Truman, Taft's friends wish that Henry would pick somebody else as his favorite Republican. This is Leif Eed in Washington.
In Baltimore, a new drug that both assists penicillin in its miraculous work and reduces its cost has been described at the University of Maryland Medical School. The report on this development in the Forward March of Medicine was made by Dr. Paul W. Wilcox, a research specialist. In another part of the nation, up in the Northwest at Seattle, Washington, some lucky veteran, he must be a former enlisted man and have two children, is going to rent a new $15,000 home for 2 years at only $60 a month. Seems a builder pled guilty to illegally using veterans' priorities to build homes, one of which he occupied himself. The judge ruled he must move out, set the rent, and the requirements for an occupant. They'll draw lots. More news in a moment, but now your announcer.
The liberties and privileges we all enjoy are as natural to us as breathing. We simply take them for granted. But right now, when so many countries of the world are standing at the crossroads between free government and dictatorship, it's important that we stop taking our liberties for granted, that each of us makes it his own private and personal job to be the kind of good citizen who's going to advance those liberties and help make sure that they remain as live and real as they were when our forefathers gave them to us, and when our friends and brothers died to preserve them. Your government protects your rights, but your government is you. And unless you exercise those rights wisely and continuously, they will be gravely endangered. Your American heritage is your most priceless possession. So remember, we are standing at the crossroads right now in many of the European countries, and your American heritage, again, is your most priceless possession. Now, back to the NBC newsroom.
In New York City, a market official has accused meat firms of holding back supplies in hopes of higher prices. This morning, both wholesalers and retailers have risen in rebuttal. In Albany, New York, the manager of one of those self-service laundries says it's astonishing how many men now come in and do the family wash, and they ask fewer questions and follow directions better than the ladies. Gentlemen, take a bow. In Philadelphia, Ben Kaplan is an owner of a company making automobile burglar alarms. Mr. Kaplan recently took the one off his car to loan to a friend and is using taxis temporarily. In Maywood, New Jersey, 10-year-old Timothy Murphy saw yesterday's snow, figured it just right for his new skis. Police found him going up and down a hill, but insisted on taking him home. You see, it was 4 o'clock in the morning. That's the story, folks. John Cameron Swayze saying goodbye from the NBC newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you news of the world. Tonight, Washington, the Battle of the Grain Dollars. London, it's still a conference in name only. Rome, the communists give up again. Cleveland, tragedy and inspiration in one small town. Washington, John Lewis, period. Now a brief message from Tom Moore.
Don't know the latest percentage figures on that old cost of living index, but I guess I don't need to tell you that prices are still somewhere up there in the stratosphere. But you know, there's one commodity that stays at the same price. One product that's never gone up one penny. And that's good old Alka-Seltzer. Yes, in spite of increased costs in every department, in raw materials, in manufacturing, and everything else, you can still buy Alka-Seltzer at any drugstore at 30 or 60 cents the package. Furthermore, you'll find Alka-Seltzer a real economy because it's one preparation that offers relief from not one, but many different common ailments. You take Alka-Seltzer for occasional headache, muscular aches and pains, and the ache all over feverish misery of colds. And you take it for occasional acid indigestion, heartburn, and after-meal distress. Alka-Seltzer's such a good product, and such an economical one, no home should ever be without it. So keep your home well supplied by having an extra package handy. Buy two instead of one. Good advice, and if you heed it, you will have Alka-Seltzer handy when you need it. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
Senate Republicans set out tonight to pin grain speculation on officials or employees of the United States government. Senator Bridges called on all cabinet members, or will do so right away, to furnish reports on speculative trading by any and all government officials or employees and in their departments. And on the Senate floor, Senator Williams of Delaware demanded that congressional committees press the hunt. He accused the Truman administration of manipulating the market. He urged investigating committees to pay particular attention to purchases by government officials, especially when any such purchases were made and whether they coincided with or came a few days before crop reports by the Department of Agriculture. The Senate Appropriations Committee started the fireworks this morning with Mr. Pauley, Ed Pauley, a special assistant to the Secretary of War, on the witness stand. First off, Mr. Pauley admitted everything in principle, nothing in particular. Sure, he traded in grain, all commodities, in fact, this year before joining the War Department staff and for a while afterwards. Maybe $1 million worth, and overall, he made a neat profit for himself. I dealt, he said, in everything I could make a profit in the good old American way. But he said he had sold everything on entering the government or shortly after, and it cost him about $100,000 to do it. That is, he had sold all but 50,000 bushels of grain he had bought for his employees as a bonus transaction for them. So far, so clear, and no argument. It was in the clinches the knife started flying on both sides. At one point, Senator Ferguson, the Michigan Tiger prosecutor, cited a recent statement by Attorney General Tom Clark that grain speculators have been profiteering in human misery. Senator, Mr. Pauley broke in, if the purchase of grain creates human misery, then my selling of grain relieved human misery, and I've done both. And each time you made a profit? No, that's not true, but overall I did rather well. Then again, the questioning hinged on politics. Senator Ferguson questioned Mr. Pauley about his statement of last night, counterattacking the Stassen charges. You remember, Mr. Stassen charged that government insiders had been trading in grain. The Pauley statement of last night in reply, the senator asked, was that a slap at the Republican Party and Stassen? Yes, the witness replied. Certain loose charges have been tossed about by some political parties and candidates. Do you mean Democratic Party men or candidates? No. I'm not talking about Attorney General Clark or Secretary of Agriculture or President Truman. I think he added, it's well known I'm for Truman. He's a great man and I'm for him and I would not do anything to hurt him. And finally, Senator Ferguson said he was going to insist that Pauley bring his books before the committee. I am not being singled out here, Mr. Pauley asked, just as one person who is dealt on the markets, am I? So far as the committee is concerned, Senator Bridges replied, we want to know about any similar transactions by any government official. Others will be called to testify. Then Mr. Pauley replied, you may certainly have my books, and I am proud to give them to you. Meanwhile, across Capitol Square's Secretary of Labor Schwellenbach announced the administration would lay down the gauntlet to the Republicans on the issue of price controls. He'll do it in a couple of days, perhaps Monday or Tuesday. He'll present specific proposals for price ceilings and rollbacks. Controls under this plan would be limited to commodities that, one, basically affect the cost of living, or two, that are basic to the costs of agricultural or industrial production, or three, commodities essential to our foreign policy. But the Schwellenbach program, incidentally, is going to run into a Republican stone wall, probably. Representative Wolcott of the House Banking Committee noted tonight that the administration plan would authorize price ceilings on anything in short supply. He raised an eyebrow and he asked, is there anything that isn't in short supply except toy balloons and table radios? Meanwhile, big events are transpiring on the other side of the Atlantic. First, here's Leon Pearson in London.
difficult to see how this conference of foreign ministers can last much longer after the mutual recrimination that was indulged in this afternoon. Lancaster House was electric. Here is a synthesis of the purple passages. Molotov, the British and American governments are making profits from the sale of coal and timber in their zones of Germany. They're buying up firms in Germany and attempting to perpetuate a division of the country. Bevan, I am used to this sort of thing on the radio, but I had hoped it would not come into the conference room. Molotov, we all know that a plan is ready to incorporate the French zone into the combined Anglo-American zones, with the possibility of a capital at Frankfurt. Marshall, I deny this allegation. There is no such plan, tentative or otherwise. Molotov, the Soviet Union is not asking, but is demanding that the question of reparations be settled at once. Marshall, let us first have economic information as to what is going on in the eastern zone of Germany. Molotov, let us first have a disclosure of the profits made by Britain on the sale of coal from the Ruhr. Bevan, every time we ask for information, we get insult. Molotov, certain foreign reactionary circles want to use Germany as a strategic base against the democratic countries of Europe. Marshall, it is obvious that Mr. Molotov's statement is not designed for serious discussion here, but is intended for another audience. But the method of procedure makes it difficult to inspire respect for the Soviet Union. After the meeting, I was told by a member of the American delegation, it is now clear that no agreement can be reached on economic principles, and this, in effect, means no agreement on anything. This is Leon Pearson in London.
Now another angle of view on the European stage. This time, a close-up of Italy. Another optimistic report for our side. Here's Jack Bigon in Rome.
Rome's general strike ended officially just 1 hour ago, but the official announcement by the Federation of Labor was actually only confirmation of the obvious fact that leftist elements have suffered a major defeat. The strike was actually broken early this evening. Late this afternoon, shops reopened throughout the city. By 7 o'clock, main streets looked almost normal. The back-to-work movement, sponsored by the Christian Democrats and the Federation, was obviously successful. There was no doubt that if the strike continued into the third day, most workers would openly defy orders of their labor bosses and return to their posts. And the significant fact was that the violent retaliation threatened by the left in case shops and businesses tried to reopen fizzled into ineffectual booing by milling crowds. And even those crowds which did gather at a few points were obviously not composed of irate workers. They were mostly gangs of teenage dead-end kids who were either paid to provoke trouble or were just joining in the fun. Socialist and communist leaders will be busy the next few days trying to convince their followers that the strike ended in a great victory for labor and the unemployed. The fact is that the public works program and other unemployment measures formulated by the government long before the strike began will be put into operation just about exactly as planned. The left will try to take the credit, but they will have a hard time convincing Romans. The latest scene in the communist rehearsal for revolution was such a complete fiasco that the entire play may have to be rewritten. This is Jack Bigon in Rome.
Now let's descend from the global plane and report on pinpoint events at home. There's tragedy and inspiration in a small town in Ohio. Here's Edward Wallace in Cleveland.
Ever think how you'd feel, Morgan, if disaster struck just before Christmas? Be pretty tough, wouldn't it? Well, just such a tragedy has overwhelmed an entire Ohio community. It's the little town of Skyle, a hamlet of 1,200 souls about 80 miles southeast of Cleveland. Its main artery of lifeblood is the Skyle Pottery Company. Yesterday, Skyle's pottery plant was engulfed and destroyed by fire. It was a double blow. Its owner, L.P. Reese, had made elaborate plans for an annual Christmas party December 22nd, a party at which he planned to distribute $400,000 in bonuses to his 830 employees. Now, that party and those bonuses have gone up in the flames that level the plant. You see, Skyle's pottery is more than just a plant. It's a symbol of courage as well. 15 years ago, Reese was broke. He was out hunting with 7 unemployed pottery workers. They stumbled across a broken-down, abandoned pottery, a plant that had gone broke, leaving the townspeople losses of $85,000. Well, Reese and the townspeople got together. Reese made the pottery a going concern. The town was prosperous again. Then came the fire yesterday, a loss of $2 million, none covered by insurance, and the town's source of life was gone. But before the ruins even finished smoking, the townspeople were swarming over the debris, men and women, boys and girls with shovels and wheelbarrows. Without even being asked, they started the work of reconstruction. And tomorrow night, at Skyle's High School, Reese is going to tell his fellow townsmen of formal plans to rebuild. But if courage is the vital material needed, the little town of Skyle, in the face of its blackest Christmas, is demonstrating it has lots of it. This is Edward Wallace in Cleveland.
John L. Lewis sent a scrawled note on a small piece of paper to William Green today. It said simply, Green, AFL, we disaffiliate, and then the date, 12:47. That was all. He explained nothing. He left all that to his trusted associate of many a labor battle, K.C. Adams. Thus, once again, John Lewis struck it out alone. Popularly, the break will be attributed to the fact that the AFL Council bypassed John Lewis and voted to sign up for the benefits of the Taft-Hartley Law. But that's only part of the story. Here's more of it. John L. Lewis has a serene contempt for union leaders who do not, as he sees it, stand on their own, fight their own battles and win or lose. He himself has never been a man to hedge a bet. Once he bet on the Republicans against Roosevelt. He bet his job as head of the CIO. He lost and he pulled out. He bet more recently that he could bypass the Taft-Hartley Law and make an independent contract with Big Steel and the coal operators. He won. Then he bet the AFL would follow him in a stubborn, last-ditch battle against the law, no holds barred. He lost. But he still believes the union should not ride the fence. Unions should not go hat in hand and beg for the benefits of the law and at the same time appropriate millions of dollars to fight the law. And besides, there's 1948 and a presidential campaign. Maybe he won't agree, this John L. Lewis, with every piece of education a collective union dollar preaches. Figure that one out. But that's what happened in Washington today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. With another weekend at hand, now'd be a good time to check up on that supply of Alka-Seltzer. The late hours and irregular eating habits of the weekend might add up to a headache and an acid stomach upset Monday morning. So be prepared for relief the pleasant, effective Alka-Seltzer way. Check up. And if those tablets are down to four, that's the time to buy some more.
When you buy vitamins, get the greatest value for your money. Listen.
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins.
Yes, penny for penny, one-a-day brand multiples give you more milligrams of vitamins than any other nationally known brand of multiple vitamins sold by your druggist. Each one-a-day brand multiple capsule contains all the vitamins for which requirements have been established in human nutrition. Dependable for quality, purity, and...
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. Paris Premier Robert Schuman's government administered a sound whipping to the communists today. Premier Schuman won a vote of approval 411 to 183 and shut off debate on issues concerning Soviet Russia. The communists wanted to follow the Molotov lead and keep on talking. Jerusalem. Veteran Jewish underground guerrillas went on the warpath against the Arabs tonight from Haifa to Hebron. The day's disorders at seven places killed 24 more persons, making the total in 13 days nearly 200 dead in the Holy Land. Washington, the House Labor Committee asked the Justice Department today to determine whether James C. Petrillo and his American Federation of Musicians can be prosecuted under the antitrust laws for monopolistic practices. Mr. Petrillo has ordered his musicians to stop making records after December the 31st, and there are standing orders in the union against television performances. New York, Joe Lewis announced today that his fight next June against Jersey Joe Walcott will definitely be his last. He has defended the title 24 times. Albany, New York, comes Henry Wallace with another presidential prediction. Eisenhower, if nominated, will unquestionably win, said Mr. Wallace, no matter what party nominates him. Even a third party, Mr. Wallace? That until tomorrow at this same time is News of the World. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.